you have reaped on. Good decision. Welcome back to another episode, guys, of your favorite podcast, Do It For The Content. If it's not your favorite, it's okay. It's your favorite now. I'm your host, JLKK. You might know me as JL Knows Best on the internet. This is the podcast where I give aspiring content creators tips and strategies to help you take your content creation career to the next level. This podcast episode, guys, this episode, I interviewed my friend Steph. We both went to Penn State together, and she works as a digital media specialist. Well, she did, right? And the reason why I interviewed her is because I wanted to really help us get a deeper understanding of what goes on behind the scenes of the industry. And when I tell you the conversation we had in this podcast, so many good gems were dropped. It's just crazy because when I interview people, I'm so in tune in the conversation and present that I don't realize all the quality things that are being said. Like Steph, she's very knowledgeable of the industry, and I'll drop some points that we talked about. So we talked about knowing your worth and not getting exploited as an influencer. We talked about how to reach out to these brands when you're cold emailing, the best way to format your email. We talked about the importance of having a media kit and negotiating, especially when you're dealing with contracts, tips for figuring out how to understand your contracts. We talked about the selection process on how brands find their influencers. And we talked about how to set yourself up to stand out in such an oversaturated industry. You guys, this episode is it, and that's on period. So before I jump into this podcast episode with my conversation with Steph, again, if you guys have not given this podcast a 5-star review, I would appreciate it if you just take a second and do that. Thank you very much. It means a lot to me. And without further ado, also look out. This week is a very important week for me. I'll be dropping something very significant for you, especially creators who are trying to grow on TikTok and understand what TikTok is. So be looking at my social medias, Dre_knows best on Instagram for that post. It's something I've been working on for a long time. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Kind of nervous, but it's going to be great. All right, guys, let's jump right into this interview. Enjoy. What was the craziest thing you've ever done for the content?
I mean,
okay, so you're not an influencer. I mean, you were a digital marketing strategist.
Yeah.
But your Instagram does have a lot of good pictures. Like when you travel to Thailand and all these different places, you travel to bomb pictures in general. So when it came to doing content, what's the craziest thing you ever done for content?
I mean, I'm a little trifling for the gram. You know when you take pictures and you just got a catalog and you're trying to make somebody jealous and you're like, oh, I'm going to post this if I went out tonight, but I'm sitting at home in my pajamas.
I've done that so many times.
Oh, yeah.
So many times.
No shame in my game.
No shame. I remember I posted a really nice picture. Even my Halloween, the last picture I posted, I was looking a hot mess. My wig was off. I was bald headed. And I was just posting it again. All the comments, you're so beautiful. And I'm like, I wish you could see me now.
I wish you knew.
We're all guilty of that. But that's good.
But also for my, as you mentioned, so I'm a digital media specialist and by trait, not now.
Yeah.
So none of my life revolves around me promoting myself or me promoting my content. So it's almost funny for me to hear what other influencers do. When I myself, just a regular person day to day, you're like, I'm probably doing the same.
We're all secretly influencers in the deep part of our heart. We're all secretly content creators.
Everybody likes the influence and just denies that they don't like it. We've been programmed by it. Yeah. And to deny it is almost silly.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. Tell me a little bit about your background. So I know now you're in tech, but before you went to tech, you were in the digital space.
Yeah.
So tell me about how that job was.
Yeah, so I wanted to go to medical school. Shout outs to all the people that did not have to encounter me as a doctor.
Too many years.
That would have been a problem. But and then I got into digital marketing. And for anybody who doesn't know, Dre and I went to college together.
Hey, Penn State.
And something just kind of clicked. And we were kind of the first generation to get into that. So we were, getting into social media, influencers were a thing. And then for me, I was like, hey, this is pretty lucrative. And not a lot of people were majoring in that, digital media analytics, things related to content creation or SEO, SEM, how content should be laid out both on a platform, an app, and then, your actual social media channels, et cetera, emails, blah, blah, blah. And some of it already existed, email marketing, content marketing. That obviously has been around for a very long time. And then I just continued on, got an MBA in digital marketing as well.
Oh, shoot. She got an MBA. I forgot you had an MBA.
Ooh, yeah.
She popping.
Well, it's important. only a small percentage, I would say under 10% of Latinos actually get postgraduate degrees. Yeah. So for me, it was just more about breaking the stigma. Breaking it. You know?
I love that. I love that. Shout out to you. Breaking down the barriers.
But also, why you and I decided to have this conversation is because I also do not believe degrees define intelligence. I don't believe degrees define the amount of knowledge that should be available to you.
True.
And long story short, I got into digital marketing and content creator. And my first job was with a blogger who now owns a media company, funny enough. And she was an influencer. And through her clout, she was able to establish a company and a career and all of that. And through her, I got to host a lot of events, understand content creation, understand it from the influencer perspective, but also she worked with other influencers. So in doing so, I got to do a lot of the behind the scenes. I've never wanted to be famous. I always wanted to be like the Illuminati, like managing all the famous people.
And that's actually where the real money is. The managers make the most money to me.
But also you do learn a lot of things about like how people are exploited, how the system's not always built to be open and expansive, inclusive, how a very mainstream content creator or mainstream market is more important than establishing something that's inclusive to all. And we always talk about that.
We do. Tell me a little bit about that, like how influencers are exploited. How did you experience, did you see that firsthand when you were in that industry?
I mean, or like even I wouldn't say particularly me doing it.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a caveat. Yeah.
She is not the one, guys. Don't attack her, please.
No. Don't come at my Instagram later. My parents will be very upset if like three people are like angry commenting.
I do know, because one of the things too as creators, we don't really know our worth. Or maybe we do, but we don't know our worth, because we will take gigs. Again, everyone is struggling now. So we just get an email from a brand. Hey, can you like post with these clothes? We'll give you free clothes and whatever. But we don't realize that we can charge for those things. There's money to be made, you know, from your behind the scenes. Why do these brands and companies think they can just, you know?
I mean, it's very simple. Press kits at the beginning. You know, you're getting a press kit. You're getting free things. A lot of the there'll be two types. So like either a social media manager or an influencer manager, or there'll be people within that scope of a title.
Yeah.
I mean, the way I look at it, and it's no shade to anyone because I've worked in those spaces. Mm-hmm. It's how to get the biggest bang for your buck with the least amount of money. Those products were already produced. Those products were already going to market. They're going to box them up real cute. They're going to send them to you for free, quote unquote. For the expectation that you post for them. And the way I look at it is, let's say you have 100 followers, 150 of your followers buy those products. Those products are maybe, let's say, $10 each.
Yeah.
Multiply $10 by 50 followers. Look how much revenue you've made them, and how much did you make?
Mm-hmm.
None.
Zero. But you're making them money.
Mm-hmm. And that's just something to look at it. And look, I'm not saying the system's dark and warped and like everybody's against you, but I'm also not saying that you're that special. And I know I always say this.
Yeah, no one is that special.
So in thinking that, and thinking that you're a part of an influencer list that it's going to get hit up. So anytime any product comes out, they're going to find these influencers depending on the niche, or maybe it's just overall influencers.
Yeah.
And you're all getting sent the same crap. How smart are you to differentiate yourself so you're putting money in your pocket? And not just getting a nice cute box.
After a while, you just get a ton of cute boxes, and you're posting on Instagram or social media and making money for them instead of for yourself.
Yeah. So, like you said, it's understanding your worth, understanding the value you contribute.
Yeah.
Those are big things you need to know head on.
Like, that's true.
You can't be scared to say no. You can't be scared to question things. The biggest thing I saw with, I was doing a project for grad school, and it was like, hey, write a BuzzFeed article. And fun fact, everybody, BuzzFeed has community posts, so you're not, you know, special if you do these.
No one's that special.
These are community posts that anybody can contribute. Then based off like the likes, they might get picked up, and then BuzzFeed posts them on their main page.
That's cool.
Yeah, so if you guys ever want to write for BuzzFeed, not sure if they're still doing that. BuzzFeed has really declined in like popularity.
I noticed.
But no shade, BuzzFeed, you're still phenomenal. Don't come at me with a subpoena. But I did it, got connected with a few beauty influencers that I had met through my friend Juvina. And then from there, like, I added all these girls, wrote the article, and I just saw how many of them are so talented, how many knew what their contract was about, and how many didn't know what their contracts were about, how many didn't have media kits. Like, something so simple.
Why is a media kit important?
I mean, a media kit's essentially showing brands or potential partners or anybody who you're going to collaborate with on a corporate level. It doesn't mean, you know, influencer to influencer. That's a different game, you know? It's laying down, I have X amount of followers, I contribute to X amount of views, X amount of engagement per channel. Here's my background. Here's what I primarily do. Here's my, like, it's kind of a LinkedIn profile.
Yeah.
I would call it, to put it simply. And people don't have media kits or even a press kit. Like, you don't have a press kit as you become bigger. And it's because, again, you don't know your worth. You don't know. And honestly, a lot of influencers don't know if they're going to make this a full-time career. And it's okay.
I feel like even because when I first got started, I forgot who told me about the media kit. But it was, I felt like to make myself stand out, I really had to have a media kit because I'm showing, like, okay, I get these many views on my videos. I get this many comments. I get this. I have like 70-something percent females following me. I'm trying to reach these certain brands. So I would like take my media kit and I would go on LinkedIn. I would look up people who work for whatever company I want to work with, the influencer strategists. And I would like message them on LinkedIn, send them my media kit and whatnot. And I feel like that would really like made me stand out versus my peers, like having that media kit alone, you know. But from your end, what's the selection process? When these companies are looking for influencers, you know, because like, yes, I can stand out because I have a media kit, but like, how do you guys find people?
I mean, obviously, in some cases, like when I first started, it really is just a Google search.
Oh, yeah?
It really is.
Oh, real?
So you're just searching through accounts and have you noticed that there's sometimes really small influencers that still get media kits? Micro influencers. So there's macro and micro influencers. Yeah. Again, I'm not special. This is all information you can Google. I just so happen to go to college for it.
Yeah.
Doesn't make me the most knowledgeable. Like on LinkedIn, there's like literally there's like business influencers on LinkedIn. Oh, fun fact.
Wow.
Where you're like,
dang, everybody popping in different industries. Let me find out.
But there's macro and micro. And sometimes it is a Google search, you know, to search maybe top beauty influencers. And then you go from there. And then it might just mean doing channel searches and hashtag searches and just seeing what level of influencers you have. And then sometimes companies can actually buy from, I've been out of the game for so long that I'm like forgetting the name of it. Essentially, it's like email list, call list that you can buy, where it's companies that collect all of this information, like consumer marketing companies, where they can have a list of contacts for that. Or sometimes you might just know agents where you can say, hey, I would love to talk to you about accessing the list of contacts that you have and this demographic. Yeah. But what's important to know is despite how they're found, you're always going to fit a demographic. So we always talk about your niche.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like having it. Yeah. I remember I even had that too. I was going to ask you about that. Cause we talked about that, you know, regardless of the selection process, there are, like you said, there are those influencers who even are micro influencers who get certain brand deals. But I noticed, right, that there are certain, like, I'll just be very blunt, honest, with the Black community. Like, I had a friend, he has like almost 1 million followers on Instagram, like 900 something thousand on Instagram. And he got a brand deal from VH1 or whatever company, and he didn't even get paid that much, right? And other brand deals, other deals he was telling me he's getting paid like 5,000 or 3,000, but he has millions of followers. And a lot of big people on Instagram too, especially in the Black community, they will get the brands like the Fashion Nova, the Boohoo, whatever, whatever. But then you see the Caucasians, they get like the McDonald's, the Amazon, the other. So why is it that way that these creators of color are usually getting the smaller brand deals, or they don't get looked at versus like Caucasian creators? They like,
And I wouldn't even say smaller brand deals. They're just trying to pigeonhole you into a specific brand ideology.
So that's even deeper than I thought. Yeah.
So even with, I mean, the inception of everything that's going on with Black Lives Matter, with now the Latino vote is very important. There's always been a divide between what is mainstream and what is not mainstream. And, you know, I say things that are controversial all the time, but even with marketing, there are content creators that are more broadly, you know, accepted, more broadly influential. And mm-hmm. obviously brands that know that that fits their brand idea, their yeah. brand name, their mission statement, they're going to go for that mm-hmm. versus maybe going for a Black influencer that is much more niche. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't like devote yourself to accessing and acquiring those big brand deals.
Yeah.
And that's the problem when you allow yourself to be pigeonholed, where when your agents or your social media managers or your camp managers are giving you these things that are somewhat stereotypical.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, and it's like, okay, like you just notice that you're getting all the brand deals that are for a Black community mm-hmm. or for the Latino community mm-hmm. and not the ones that are more general, you know?
Yeah. Or even how we don't see broad Asian representation, and it has a lot to do with what we're being forced to consume and what we're not asking for.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that we are expanding the market more now that we want Black influencers and Hispanic influencers and Asian influencers? So that's why I do think it has to be up to the influencer to say, no, I want to go for those deals because I believe that I'm going to be that exclusive representation for these kids. And I also know that I can do as much work as these white influencers or what are quote unquote mainstream influencers. Because being white doesn't always mean mainstream. There are plenty of mainstream creators of color.
That's true.
But how can you get there as well?
I don't know. I feel like the industry always just has that token. They always find that one token.
Oh, yeah.
Not mainstream person that makes them their token mainstream person of color. You know?
I mean, everybody gets tokenized. And
tokenized.
It is. It is. And it's unfortunate. But I think I always tell you this and the few of your friends that I've encountered.
Yeah.
It's a matter of understanding the crucial imperfections in the system.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding that you're going to get pigeonholed to some extent if you're not meeting the mainstream quote of I'm white, I'm a male, I'm this, I'm that.
Yeah, yeah.
Understanding those intricacies. And sometimes you have to play into it at the beginning, and sometimes you don't have to play into it at all, and you're going to kick down doors and you're going to set new standards and new expectations. But like you said from the very beginning of this whole conversation is understanding your worth.
Yes.
Knowing what you can ask for, knowing how to search for things, knowing how to access the digital content strategist or social media strategist, knowing to have a media kit, knowing what a press kit is.
Right, right.
Understanding that you can reach out to brands directly. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
And also understanding that sometimes you have to make sacrifices and do things for free.
True.
But also knowing that you can put your foot down and say, I do not want those contracts, or I'm sorry, I appreciate you sending me these press kits.
Yeah.
However, I want to discuss maybe potentially working on a paid project together because I think it'd be more beneficial to both of us.
I need to write, you guys write that down. That's a good sentence to say. Okay. So, since you did say that, I want to ask you and I'm not sure if this is within your area, but if someone was going to reach out to you, say the influencer was going to email a brand, a cold email.
Yeah.
What would be the best way to phrase their email, like to structure the email?
So I've, funny enough, I was looking through TikTok videos and a lot of influencers are like, you know, I've emailed brands directly. And I saw something with that regard that was very intelligent and it was very well said. And it was along the lines of have a product in mind that's in their repertoire. Specify how that product is applicable to your existing market. So think of your user, like your followers are users of some extent, you know, that use products. They're a market niche or they're a market, you know, mainstream, whatever they are, they're a market, people that things can be sold to. Explain that to whomever you are emailing in that regards, like, hey, I see you brought this new bottle of water. I've noticed that my followers really are responsive to this. I was wondering if you would like to collaborate. And just like with salary negotiations, don't start putting your foot in your mouth and discussing money right off the bat. It's kind of the foot and door approach. You got to get your foot in the door, kind of gauge where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Kind of let them lay out their cards. If you're already going to say like, hey, I'll post one Instagram post for $100 and they would have paid you $1,000.
Oh, you just sold yourself for low.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
That's
yes,
what I mean.
Yes.
And they teach you that in like business school, you know, like, oh, don't, when negotiating, don't off the bat say, I'll work for 70K. Like, no, they always tell you, hey, let the recruiter, let whomever's hiring you kind of gauge where you're coming from. Let them throw out ranges.
Yes.
So why aren't influencers doing this?
Mm-hmm. Because we're not taught that. That's a sad part. I mean, hopefully there's podcasts and other podcasts out there teaching influencers what to do. Because there's never been a structure, you know, like of how do we reach out to these brands. Everyone is just, I think another thing is the complaint culture. Like we just sit down, we just complain and complain. Oh, we don't get no brand deals. We don't get it. No, this, we don't get this, we don't get that. Learn, like you said, we can do the emailing, reach out to them and everything. You
What's
know?
The worst they're going to tell you? No, thank you.
Yeah. And I'd be like, I'm just kidding.
No. Imagine. No, but you know how many times we're told no a day by things that we don't care about?
Yeah.
Like you go to Dunkin' Donuts, oh, we're out of almond milk, but we have oat milk. And you're like, okay. But you get mad because somebody's going to tell you no to a business deal. Right. Then you go find another business. And also sometimes people forget that collaborating with smaller brands is still okay.
Yeah.
What if you collaborated with 100 smaller brands at a smaller scale and you still made those $1,000?
Right.
But everybody just wants to go for the Amazons, the Googles. And yes, those are wonderful and amazing and incredible deals to have. But those might not always come every day.
Yeah. And I like that you said that too, because sometimes the smaller brands that you can reach out to will build that relationship with you. So you, even though that one post $100, but then they'll come back. Okay, next week, oh, we have another post, $100, $100, $100, starts acquiring, and then you're making your $10,000 or whatever.
Exactly.
You know?
So it's just looking at it from a end of the day, you're being used.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Hey, you're being used for your clout. You're being used for your following. You're being used for the engagement.
Yeah.
And if you don't realize that early on, that's how you get used and abused by an industry. Mm. It doesn't mean you need to be negative or pessimistic about it, because content creators are the life force of the internet right now.
Yeah.
You're keeping us woke. You're keeping us entertained. Mm-hmm. You're keeping us alive. You're shit. All these young kids are on TikTok are keeping me relevant.
Yeah.
But the moment you forget that you're being captured for a reason, that your following is influential to brands and that they're using you for a purpose, that's where you make the error. That's where you're not reading your contracts. That's where you're not negotiating rates. That's where you're taking things for free, even though you know you could have made revenue off it.
Right.
Again, going back to knowing your worth.
That's going to be the title of this podcast, Knowing Your Worth. I don't know if you have any familiar with this, but like you said, you're not reading the contracts. Based on your experience of working that with that influencer, were there any things that influencers should be looking at when they're looking at contracts?
Well, for example, most influencers don't even do contracts. Like sometimes when they start early on, it's kind of like a bartering system and an exchange of goods.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing not to do contracts at the beginning?
I think it's. So funny enough, one of my friends is a OnlyFans account manager.
Hey, that's a thing. So, oh, you did tell me that.
Just for the people who don't know, you might not be talking to the girl sending you the nudes. You're probably talking to an account manager.
Wow.
But she was talking to me about essentially running an account of one of these amazing OnlyFans influencers. And I was telling her like, hey, are you laying down a contract? Because you can't just go off like the handshake deal. Like, hey, yeah, well, I'll do this for you. You'll pay me this percentage based off this amount of work. That's nice and all, but like that doesn't do anything for you in the long run. And it's not to say that either one of them are sketchy, but it's business you're doing. The content you're creating is business. And I don't understand why influencers are so afraid. Something about adding the concept of a structure to their work freaks them out, and it's no longer creative and it's no longer important. And it's like, you're either going to know your worth from the get and not get exploited, or you're going to sit here and live in this fantasy world of like, my content is only for the aught, and then you're going to end up getting exploited.
Yeah.
And I'm so against that. I would much rather you know what's up and dislike it, but you know what's up, than to live in La La Land. Literally, we live in La La Land.
Yeah, no, because the worst thing that can happen is you work with a brand, you guys don't do a contract, and then you're like, okay, you're going to pay me $1,000. You post your video. You spend all the time. You film it. You edit it. You post it. And then you're like, hey, it's posted. Here's my PayPal. Hello. And then they don't reply back to you. That definitely, it's not happened to me, but I've heard stories of people happening to them, you know? That's why contracts are so important. I mean, things when it comes to contracts too, contracts are intimidating. I can't maybe that's why like it's we don't like to do a contract because there's so many words on there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't hurt to get a lawyer too, you know.
And again, we need to understand that not everybody will be able to afford that from the beginning. So then there's the flip side of contracts. where oftentimes people are so excited to get these deals that one or two scenarios happen. You sign too quickly out of fear of taking the day.
Yeah.
Or two, you're pressured into signing quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, think about it. They still laid out a deal for you for a reason. You can wait the 24 hours to review that paperwork. Very true. You don't know, if you can't afford a lawyer, Google it. It sounds ignorant. It sounds ignorant to say that, you know, the Academy of Google saving us today.
But
sometimes there's big words on those contracts that, you know, me at 28, I'm like, huh?
Mm-hmm. Same.
What?
Same.
The clause of what?
Huh?
What? And I Google it and I try my best. And, you know, I don't have a team of lawyers.
Yeah.
But I have that. And then also using your network. It's crazy to see. And we literally just talking about it today. Yeah. But your group of friends who are also career influencers and how supportive you are of one another.
What word did you use?
Career influencers.
Ha! Ladies and gentlemen, we have a new word in my resume. Career influencer. Hey, I like that word. Continue. Yeah.
Career influencers. I mean, if you're a career influencer, you're making a lucrative amount of money. You're making essentially what salary wage would be annually. Yeah. You can take care of your full benefits. And I think people often forget that that is a career path.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe not something that people are used to. But when we push it aside and we don't call it for what it is, a career,
yeah,
it's almost funny. We've talked about it. Mm-hmm. Literally the level of intricacy that you take to do your work, how much time and effort all of you do, and even your network of influencers, to bring it back to contracts, is you guys might not have a team of lawyers, but you have a team of people who have experienced similar things. And at least if you can trust them, maybe take the time to sit down and say, hey, have you seen this in your contract before? Hey, mm-hmm. I heard you've worked with this brand before. Have you seen this before?
That's a key thing right there. Yeah. Like, you go and reaching out to your network. Because I know in the beginning when TikTok started blowing up and more brands were coming on, a lot of people didn't know what to charge because mm-hmm. that was new to people.
Yeah.
Most TikTok influencers have been in the game for maybe a year mm-hmm. or two, you know? And these brands are reaching out to people and, again, exploiting mm-hmm. them, saying, I'll pay you this amount. Meanwhile, they're paying another influencer who probably has less followers but knows their worth, who is charged a way more higher.
Mm-hmm.
So we created a group chat so we can all communicate mm-hmm. and be like, hey, this brand just reached mm-hmm. out to me. Did it reach out to anyone else? And we're like, yes, okay, let's talk on the side. The problem with that is that most influencers, we don't like to talk about
money.
We don't like to talk about it. Like, well, how much are you making? How much is this? But meanwhile, the best way to grow and mm-hmm. actually make more money is to make sure that we're all on the same page when it comes to these brands. Because these brands, they don't know we talk.
Yeah.
Now it's becoming more better. I guess people are more accepting, uplifting, mm-hmm. helping out one another. But in the beginning, when it comes to contracts, that's a little bit different. When it comes talks about the moolah, people are like, I don't want to tell you. I don't want to help you. I don't want to.
But it's like corporate America. I mean, we don't discuss salaries at work. But also, how do you know you're being underpaid?
True. If you discuss,
right? So again, I'm not gonna sit here and I'm gonna bring it back to, we're not all special, we're all being used.
Yeah.
The dark side, right? But when you start uplifting each other by informing one another, you're doing a benefit to not just yourself but to others.
Yes.
And again, there's these macro influencers who have, you know, billions of followers collectively through all their mm-hmm. platforms, and oftentimes they ride the clout, they're doing amazing, but when do you actually see them educating?
Yeah.
They don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they figured it out. They have their team of lawyers. They have their team of, you know.
They made it. They
don't. So when all of you start acting like that, and I'm not saying you or anybody specific, but just the accumulative group, mm-hmm. when you start acting like this whole no new friends and there's not enough work for all of us, that's where you're all messing up, because end of the day, these companies need to make money, and they're going to make money off your influence one way or another. Mm-hmm. And if you don't accept that press box, they're going to send it to somebody else.
Yeah.
Who will post.
Yeah.
And you might have 1 million followers, but maybe they'll have 3 influencers who collectively have 1 million followers. So it's, again, knowing that, yes, the work you do is special and you as a person are, but collectively, from a market perspective, you're not.
No one is,
We're all replaceable in mm-hmm. in entertainment, you know? Right.
That's true. That's the scary part about it. I remember there was something that you said when we were talking last week about the reason why some influencers don't get noticed is, and I might be quoting mm-hmm. this wrong, but because of the people who are behind the scenes, like the grads who are probably like, the fresh grads from college mm-hmm. are looking for the influencers who they know. So they never get to see other influencers from other demographic because of they only going to look for the influencers to work with that they know of. I don't know if you can like.
So it was more about look at the people who are managing you and then look at those whom they have hired. So even in a professional workspace, there's affirmative action, right?
Yeah.
In most states, affirmative action is essentially that certain amount of people of color, Black, Native, Hispanic, so on and so forth, gender-wise, disability-wise, must be hired and included. However, mm-hmm. within entertainment, that isn't always applicable.
Yeah.
So when you look at the people who are hiring you and you only see a certain type of person around you, you should sit there and think, why? Mm-hmm. You know, is it because of me? Is it because I'm not talented? Or is it because I'm working for a system that does not look for the Black influencers, that doesn't look for the Hispanic influencers, that doesn't look for the disabled influencers mm-hmm. or for the Native influencers?
Right.
And be aware of that. Be aware of the fact that some of the people doing the hiring are looking for very specific things that they're only accustomed to.
Yeah. And that's what that was a statement. Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
that shit blew my mind.
Yeah.
It's so true.
It's sad to think of that, but you know, I'm brown. I always talk about it. And for me, I'm very lucky to be around a dynamic group of friends of all races, all shapes, all mm-hmm. mentalities, all cultures, all able and disabled bodies. But not everybody has had that experience. Here they're coming into the workforce.
Yeah.
They're told to do a task and they're probably going to go based off
what they know.
What they know
what
or
they used to. Yeah.
Or with influence, who are the most influential people mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
They're not gonna go out of their way to find a Nigerian influencer focusing on things related to that culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how that can apply to this brand.
Mm-hmm. And that's where it all like that's like what you said is where the roots where the problem stems from. But also that's why I really do like influencer agencies that are like diverse, mm-hmm. diversity focused, you know, mm-hmm. because that's when even that representation matters. And when people say representation matters, I'm like, okay. But when you really think about it, it does. Because when you hire that Asian person in your company, when you hire mm-hmm. that LGBT person in your company, when you hire those diverse group of people in a room, then that's when everybody gonna be getting work, you know? So it's just interesting to see like that. I want to know, to tie this all back in with knowing your worth, let's see, what are some ways that an influencer can, I don't say know their worth, but stand out as an influencer, you know?
Yeah, like professionally, you know?
Professionally, yeah. Yeah, if you're giving advice to an influencer, you know,
a little sun. But I mean, just to start, know how you are applicable mainstream. And know what is niche about you. And niche for, you know, we're throwing out jargon. Niche just means a microchasm or something small that you exclusively target.
Yes.
And then mainstream, obviously, how can you target mass mm-hmm. amounts of people? Know that and know those differences. But how is that applicable to a brand?
Yes.
So not just the clout. The clout is nice. Mm-hmm. The clout will, you know, somebody slides into my DMs and tells me I'm beautiful because I posted. Phenomenal. Does that pay my bills? Absolutely not. So
period.
Know that on paper. Just like I have to make a resume to apply to corporate America, you make your media kits.
Yes.
That is your resume. Mm-hmm. And that might not be the only way you're going to meet people. It's not going to be like, hi, here's my press kit. Can you like send mm-hmm. me stuff? No. Know that elevator speech, which business students are taught, that, you know, 10 second like spiel about yourself mm-hmm. that you can use that in a room, but mm-hmm. make it genuine.
Right.
That's the thing too, when you're selling, you know, there's people that can sell it and just they talk like salesmen and they're doing it, and then for some people that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So understand how to speak professionally, understand how to use a room. So just off the bat, knowing your worth on paper professionally, both mainstream and niche. Then two, understanding how to command a room professionally.
Yes.
Yes, you're going to have your personalities. I think I watched the Paris Hilton documentary.
Oh, yeah.
And she's such a brilliant human because she has this persona, but she's a very intelligent woman professionally. And people don't know that.
They don't know that. Yeah. They only know the persona that she puts online.
Or Kim Kardashian, people often talk about her in a room and how she commands a room and how she's, you know, very detail oriented to how they film her, what they post about her, how the she commands the room during an interview. Yeah. So why can't you do it on a small scale? What, they're going to call you arrogant, a know-it-all, ungrateful? So what?
Come on.
So what? You have to start somewhere. You have to start owning it. So yeah, own your worth in a professional manner. Own your worth in a written manner, on paper. Yes. And three, know your worth. Like, know it. Know how much you're actually tangibly worth, and know that that might increase and decrease. You're going to have to negotiate.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to ask questions. If you don't know, I don't know things oftentimes. I now work, you know, at a tech company. I'm not even working in this space anymore.
Yeah.
It, you know, I have to Google every day and keep up with things. I have to ask questions and keep up with things. Why are we so afraid to do that? Especially for these new up and coming, you know, influencers.
Google everything.
And if you don't, if you can't Google it, ask. That's where you're becoming friends with these people.
Yeah.
Hey, Drea, like when you started a year ago, how much has it changed? You see how that was so genuine, but still informative?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Like the best way to know something, I'm never afraid to ask. I'm just like, hey, let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Slide in the DMs and ask people just to know, because you can't figure it out on your own.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing. Like, life is all about community. So I think the biggest lesson of this podcast for sure is like knowing your worth. And when I think about it down, just to add to what you're saying too, like when you said know your worth, know how much you're worth, that's also going back to going to your analytics and really understand your analytics. Cause I'm starting to do that more. Is like, okay, how much is my reach? What does that mean when I have, I don't even know the details, but I'm still trying to learn it. Like when I have one impression, this and that. But like when you finally know your worth and you do that calculation, even if it's 100 people that follow you and 50 of them are the most loyal followers and they'll buy each thing, that's $50 right there. You know, like if it's each person's spending a dollar in your product, like just knowing these things are so important, because when you know your worth, you don't compare yourself to other people, because you're like, all right, that person doing this, having thousands of views, but let me just tell you about my 100 followers.
Exactly.
75 of them love me to the core and they're going to support me. And that's when you're just like, wow, I actually do have influence.
Yeah. And that's where there's a thing called like conversion rate, which is like from the start of an ad being put out, for example, to actually clicking the, you know, the cart and putting the item in the cart and clicking, you know, complete sale. What is your conversion rate? You know, how many of those people are actually converting to that product?
Yeah.
And again, for anybody who's like scared, I went to school for this. But you can Google every single thing I've learned. And any digital marketing class anybody in the world has taken, by the next year, it's obsolete because a new platform's coming out or a new update.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. So the more you feel empowered with knowledge, whether it's something as simple as understanding who you are as a brand or something as complex as understanding your analytics to the same scope that the person hiring you does.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be a better person. But also knowing that, you know, you're not that important.
You're not that special. No one is that special.
You know, we all want to be one of a kind. We all want to be these, like, not a one-hit wonder, but a long-term, you know, influence of the world. And that's nice. But sometimes these one-hit wonders are banking off one thing and they're chilling in their, you know, their nice six-bedroom homes. Mm-hmm. And they found a way to exploit the market for one hit. And then there's people who are still working in LA for years and have barely done the come up. So it's about knowing how to milk it just as much as they're going to milk you.
Yeah. It's this whole thing is a game. You just got to play it right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And there's no right equation. There's nothing about it that is, you know, perfect. Even on the professional end, we're having to figure it out just as much as you are. So whoever gets to the finish line quicker.
Cheers to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Thanks so much, Steph. It's Steph's birthday today too, y'all. I mean, no one can talk and say happy birthday, but happy birthday, Steph.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on and dropping so much knowledge and gems. Ooh, I can't wait to like everyone listens to this, and this podcast is so important. Knowing this type of thing is so important. So thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Happy birthday. Let's go get some shots.
Thank you.
Or cake or whichever
cake,
one.
Whatever.
Anyone, right?
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Drea.
Our pleasure.